Okay, so this week normally Wolf would be starting us off, so I would be asking him what his topic is. But we're going to do something, and I was going to say going to do something new, but we're actually going to do something old.
Right.
Which is that for this week, I'm going to take over the podcast, mwahaha, and talk for the entire time about WatchKit. So, and this is, I'm not doing this, you know, over Wolf's dead body. Wolf has agreed to this, so we shall see how this goes.
Please, someone send help.
Well, we'll see. So I am not the only one thinking about WatchKit this week. To give you a sense of it, there are a bunch of people who are talking about WatchKit. Our, I don't know, friend, someone we've mentioned before, underscore David Smith, had a blog post 2 days ago. His initial, he said initial impressions for WatchKit, where he said he was pleasantly surprised by how capable it was. Now, it's not actually that capable, but he had thought there would be even less stuff in there than there was. So we'll get into that. Natasha the Robot. Have you heard of Natasha the Robot, Wolf?
Is that Serenity?
What? No. Okay, no. Okay. It's actually, someone actually named Natasha.
Okay.
Natasha
okay.
Merced.
I know. Is this Serenity Caldwell? I think that's her name. Did something for iMore, I think.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
She
okay,
did
okay.
that. She did that under her own name. Okay. She is not masquerading as a robot,
okay,
as Natasha appears to be. So NatashaTheRobot.com. She's written at least 6 articles so far on WatchKit development since Tuesday. The first one being how to create a Hello World WatchKit app, which was quite nice. Gives you all the details about how to set it up. And again, a bunch of others, including ones on making a table view, things like that. Other people we've mentioned, Jared Sinclair, we've talked about him before. He has a post about difficulties in using a shared app group container with a core data store, which actually seems like a bad idea, but we'll get to that in a bit. Ray Wenderlich, I believe we've also mentioned, has several posts about WatchKit, initial impressions, getting started, things like that. And then, I'm not sure exactly if I'm going to pronounce this right, Steve Stroughton-Smith? Do you know who he is?
Yeah. Stroughton? Yeah, I think it's Stroughton. But.
Stroughton-Smith. Stroughton-Smith on Twitter has apparently been getting praised the last couple of days for all the information he's been tweeting about WatchKit. Some people said, I don't remember who said it, but somebody said, well, you know, listening to your tweets is basically better than reading the documentation. So it might be someone you want to go look up. And let's see. There are meetups, NS meetup groups for Apple Watch. There's one in the San Francisco in the Bay Area, which was started in May, which already has 512 members. Now, 512 seems a bit suspiciously binary to me, right? Like if it were, you know, 499 or 515. So maybe the robots are really, you know, taking over after all. But in any case, over 500 members for something which is not even out yet, not going to be out yet for a couple months, that shows the interest in it. And in fact, there's already a hackathon planned for this Sunday in Mountain View, California, again in Silicon Valley, which I will actually be at, where they will be talking about, well, they'll be, you know, making apps, trying to make apps for it. And apparently there's a funny story, I don't remember where I saw it, where apparently the person who set up this hackathon had to guess when Apple Watch was going to be, the WatchKit was going to be released, because of course Apple doesn't tell it in advance, and he figured it out by saying, well, Apple's employees are going on vacation over Thanksgiving, so by definition they would have to release it before that. So to answer the age-old question, who watches the WatchKit? That would apparently be just about everybody. Okay, so diving into it, so David Smith was not the only one who mentioned being pleasantly surprised about the capabilities of it. They were expecting maybe just sort of you know, basic notification support and some things that were extremely static and limited. Instead, they had got things that were only somewhat static and limited because they are limited. There's three kind of things you can do on it. And if you've read any of the documentation, you know this already, so I'll go through it pretty quick. There's notifications, same as iOS 8. They're interactive now, so you know the notification comes up. There's like a button or something you can put on it and trigger some action. And, you know, what I would suspect that the reason they were added in iOS 8 was to support this on the watch. There are glances, which are just static screens. Well, they're not static screens, but they're screens you can fill information in by them, but you can't do anything with them except tap them to open your app. And those you get by swiping up from the current app on your watch. And so that's a way for you to give a little bit of information, which you can then lead to the whole app. And then there's the full watch app, which is, again, what most people were considering that Apple would not do this time around. So they are apps, but they're not really apps the way we think of apps. Because really, what actually is it's considered to be the Watch app is a bundle of static resources. Have you read any of this stuff?
I've only done the very cursory, so this is going to be all pretty new to me. So please talk to me as if I'm an idiot.
So the app has no code in it.
Okay.
The code is in the second piece of the three things you're going to need to make something work on mm-hmm. your watch. All of which are available to you by downloading Xcode 6.2 beta, which is where all this stuff is. So the first thing is the watch app itself. And mm-hmm. again, it's no code, just one storyboard. And when I looked at it, there was a resource catalog. Mm-hmm. What do you call it? Image? No, image, whatever you call it, where you can put static images in. Mm-hmm. Then there's the WatchKit extension. And this is an extension like any other iOS 8 extension. And by definition, then, it runs on your phone. It is a separate process than your app, and it is meant to only be run for short periods of time. It's in fact meant to be run only for the duration of when your watch UI is being shown on the watch. And once you stop interacting with that, once you put it away, the extension will also die very quickly. Mm. And then the third piece is the iOS app that comes along with this. Now, the iOS app is the host to these other two pieces. It's the delivery mechanism mm-hmm. for them. You can't have a Apple Watch app without having an iOS app, and specifically an iPhone app.
Right.
You can't use iPad.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Interesting.
No. Okay. They say that in the documentation, although they don't really stress it. They basically just say, they say your app has to support iPhone. Mm-hmm. And I guess that means that, we don't know exactly what that means, but so far that seems to mean it's an iPhone app. And so you have all three of these pieces. I was actually a little surprised in Xcode that there isn't an Apple Watch. I keep getting iWatch. I want to say iWatch.
I know, me too.
An Apple Watch project type. Mm-hmm. There is no Apple Watch project type. You make an iOS app, and then you add another target for WatchKit.
Okay.
And then that actually adds two targets, because it adds the target for the watch app itself, and then it adds the target for the WatchKit extension mm-hmm. as well. Now, the documentation, there's a bunch of blog posts about this, but there's also Apple's documentation I'm talking about Xcode, is pretty good. There's an introductory developer video, which kind of goes through all the basics of it. The documentation is also pretty good. I mean, there isn't that much to talk about, but what there is pretty thorough. For example, Apple doesn't always give you documentation about all the nitty-gritty of how to set stuff up and how to launch things properly, but here they do. They say, here's exactly what you need to do. So, for example, it's a little tricky. There's also another surprise to me was that there's no watch simulator application.
Okay.
There is the iOS simulator application, and you need to go to the hardware menu and then go down to, let me open it up here, external displays.
Oh, okay.
Item at the bottom. And then that shows you a variety of sizes of external displays you can simulate. But then at the bottom there are the two Apple Watch types.
Man, I'm surprised it's so relegated.
Well, I mean, what I suspect is that they didn't have the time to do something better and they had to kind of stuff it in. Mm-hmm. But the other side of this, though, is this is a representation of the fact that the watch really isn't its own thing. Because basically, when you run your watch app, you're also running the WatchKit extension.
Right, that's a good point.
It has to be that way. If you don't, if you left your phone at home, your watch app, even if you try to launch it from the watch, won't run. They've really got to be talking to each other. And they have to be talking to each other because I'll get to that in a second. Let's see, where was I in my stuff here? The watch app is limited in certain ways, and there's an MG Siegler post on Medium, mm-hmm. which is his a few thoughts on WatchKit. where he talks about them calling it a widget watch. And basically, that's, I think that's a good way to think of it. Your app is not really a full app. It's a widget.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are a lot of things that you can't do. You can't play sounds. You can't get access to the digital crown, the rotation. Mm-hmm. Like if you wanted to do something custom with, you know, rotating the thing, the crown, mm-hmm. you can't. And that's also the simulator. The simulator is very simple in that respect. There's no like little crown UI, right, that you can manipulate. No, you just scroll up and down. Mm-hmm. And that's basically the same thing as what you were doing with the digital crown. They don't recommend performing complex or long-running network tasks mm-hmm. in your WatchKit extension. Now, again, that's quite similar to any extension, that you're not supposed to do stuff like that mm-hmm. in there because it can be killed at any time. So you want to do that stuff in your iOS app. You want to talk to, for example, the network. You want to get your document. You want to do all those things in your app and then have that talk to your extension. Now, so those two things can only talk through some fairly cumbersome means. As I talked about above in my notes, there's a container, a shared container that you can set up for your WatchKit extension and your app, the app that owns the extension. And that's kind of the way that they talk to each other because there's their own processes. So you can't use, you know, you can't use distributed objects, unfortunately, right? Distributed mm-hmm. objects? Direct? No, it's distributed objects?
Like XPC, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, XPC exists, but you can't make processes that go back and forth. So what you do is basically, hey, you want to talk to one another, you know, put a file in this location and then have the other thing, hey, there's a new file here, go use it. And of mm-hmm. course, in order for these two different processes to use the same file system, the same files, you need to, well, they recommend using things like file coordinators,
mm-hmm.
which is a existing Apple app, which I was using when I was looking into the iCloud document, because it's the same thing. You're talking mm-hmm. at the same time another process is also talking to it. But they're cumbersome to use, so it's unfortunate that that's what we're... You can also use, for little tiny bits of data, you can use defaults, user defaults as well.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, that's pretty much it. And let's see, what else? That's about it. So Apple does have, and as a way of showing you how to do that communication between them, there's a Lister app, which is actually, I believe Lister, this app might have existed already for iOS and iOS 10 as a way to show iCloud functionality. Again, I've probably used it before, but now that it's been updated to show Apple Watch functionality as well. So something that the document is shared between iOS and iOS 10, and then it's also the information is shared down to the watch as well. That's something you can have a look at. Again, there's lots of stuff out there for you to look at. I'm going to put a lot of links in the show notes. So moving on, so that's kind of what your limitations are, some of the limitations, some of the features that you have. I want to talk a little bit about the APIs directly. Now, the APIs for WatchKit are kind of the APIs for iOS put through the wash cycle about 100 times. They are still vaguely recognizable, but they are distorted, and they are much, much smaller.
Is it through the wash cycle or the watch cycle?
very nice.
I'm trying with the puns.
Trying to keep up. I appreciate it. So there are no views. Mm-hmm. There isn't NS view. There isn't UI view. Instead, there are groups, which are basically the same thing. Now, I think I've talked before about how there are different kind of node trees that Apple has made.
Right.
Well, Now they're making another one. The thing about this, though, is that you can't subclass them. Like, there isn't really a system.
Mm.
There's just a mechanism for laying things out, a very simple one, in your UI. But since your UI is very static and you can't draw, you can't do almost anything, groups are just kind of a very simple way to organize things. And I suspect they use groups instead of views precisely so that you wouldn't get frustrated about how simple they are. There's no auto layout. There's no springs and struts. It's just groups.
Mm.
And you can add UI elements dynamically. I mentioned that before. But what this means is, in this case, your scene is something that you create in your storyboard file.
Mm-hmm.
It has a certain number of elements in it. Now, you can also have tables. So tables are kind of the way that you can have an arbitrary number of elements, a dynamic number of elements. But other than tables, your elements are in the scene, in the storyboard, and that's it. You can't in your, there aren't view controllers. There's these things called WK interface controllers. Mm-hmm. That's kind of your view controller into the thing. And you can't say to the interface controller, okay, now add a new element at this point. Add a new label. Remove this label. Add another image, whatever. Mm-hmm. You're stuck with it. You're stuck with what's there. And so that means that you can't say, well, in you know, if a certain situation, then set up this UI, you know, setup. In this other situation, set up this other UI setup. They all have to be there initially. Now, you can hide and show things.
Okay.
And hiding things actually takes them out of the hierarchy or the equivalent. Mm-hmm. And so other elements will take their place on the screen. Hmm. You can also, what they recommend is using alpha to make it, to hide it, but then keep it there. Mm. So, you know, if you have like a checkbox or something that you wanted to show and hide, depending on what you were tapping, mm-hmm. you would do that by setting the alpha. And that sort of matches what iOS and the rest of you. Actually, do things actually get removed? No, because you hide things in iOS and they're still there, right? You actually have to remove them. So hiding them on in WatchKit is the equivalent of removing them from the hierarchy elsewhere. Since you can't remove things, then all you can do is hide things. But again, the table is a way to set dynamic content. That's kind of the only way you can do that. But there are still outlets and actions in the way they are in iOS and on the Mac. Now, it's funny when you think about it, because these outlets and actions normally would be just connected to the code in your own application. Mm-hmm. But here, when you say, well, I'm going to have an action from my UI to code, you're actually talking over the air from the watch to your phone. Mm-hmm. And then the code will run. And then if you say, well, now, you know, hide this element or change this element's text or whatever, then that's going over the air the other direction. And so there could be some delays there sometimes. Mm-hmm. Now, I have played around with the tables. There's no progressive loading of contents. There's no recycling of cells, anything like that. You set all the contents at once. So it's a different API than the iOS tables or the Mac tables. Now, the Mac and the iOS tables are actually similar. They're more similar than these are to the WatchKit tables. WatchKit tables are quite different. And I think it's the idea being that, you know, you're not going to want 300 elements in your table, mm-hmm. right? You're not going to need to do recycling of things. You're only going to want a couple. So that's all they give you. But it does work. Let's see. I talked about the WK interface controller. They are like view controllers, but they don't have as much functionality. But there's some functionality, again, distorted. There's a navigation interface where you can push a new interface controller on top of the old one and pop it to get rid of it. So, for example, you know, you tap a row in a table and, you know, want to have something else come up. Mm-hmm. And you can do that. Now, you can't programmatically create an interface controller. Or rather, you can. I believe you can. There's an init method for it. Mm-hmm. But because they only get populated with UI elements from the storyboard,
right,
then you can't dynamically utilize one. So what you do when you say, well, I want to push something new, you can make a new one, but you have to use it from a named scene in your storyboard. So you can only have a fixed number of types of scenes that you can show. Now, you could, according to your dynamic content, maybe you have, you know, an image that there's lots of different things you could do, but you can only reuse the ones that you already know about. So let's see. There's also a page-based navigation, again, like the page-based navigation in iOS or on Mac. This is also very static in that you can only have a fixed number of elements in your pages UI, and then you can scroll through them if you want. Now, the last thing I want to talk about in terms of APIs is, well, second to last, is that you can bring up a context menu. It's actually kind of funny, right? You can't bring up context menus on iOS, but you can on WatchKit. Hmm. And you do that by holding down with your finger. Something called a force touch, okay. Which sounds like something Darth Vader would do. But it does work. I've seen it in my testing, a little bit of testing that I did. You can only show four items in your menu because they're actually little circles, so one in each corner. Mm-hmm. And they've got guidelines as to what icon you can show in the middle of each circle for it. But again, it's sort of interesting, you know, why do this on the watch when you can't do it on the phone? Well, maybe mm-hmm. because they thought the phone was already getting too complicated and this is extremely simple. But it does seem, maybe because there's so little room, like one of the things I think they mentioned was like if you hold down on a table, maybe you could have like select all mm-hmm. as something that you do. So something that we'd normally put in the nav bar mm-hmm. of a table, now you can put in the thing. And so it's interesting. Look at it. The last thing I want to talk about in terms of APIs is because you can't, you basically can't do custom UI, you can't do custom graphics, really, mm-hmm. but you can fake it. And you know how you can fake it?
I'm guessing uh-huh. with images.
With images.
Yeah.
Have you read the sources at all? So the
people I've read talking nothing. About this I'm just projecting.
Okay. So maybe it's just what people would normally think of. So yes, you can. There's actually an API in UIImage. It dates back to iOS 5, where it can. Although actually, there's no UIImage in WatchKit. I have to look at exactly what they do, but there's an API there which says, make me an animation out of this list of images. And there are two ways to do that. You can actually pass in a list of images to it, or you can say, take this name of a resource, and if the resource, if the actual resource is on disk or in whatever, in your SSD, are labeled, you know, foo1, foo2, foo3, foo4, foo5, with the digits, then it would assume that those are the ones you want and load those up mm-hmm. and use those. And so you could have this static list of those kinds of images in your WatchKit app, because that is made up of static images and static resources. In theory, you could use the API which says, well, here, take an arbitrary list of images to make those images in your WatchKit extension, pass that over the wire to your WatchKit app, to Watch app, and then display that inside an image widget mm-hmm. interface thingy. Mm-hmm. And people do that. Some people do that, but it's not something they recommend you doing a lot of, obviously. And you can even cache images that you bring over from your extension. So it is possible. They're making it possible for you to do that, but I think it's supposed to be used in small quantities, sparingly. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay. So the next bit I wanted to talk about was the Edge Cases episode I did in August, where I talked about apps for iWatch. Mm-hmm. Because there, I totally brainstormed about what kind of apps you might make for a watch and also for Apple TV. And so now I can go through those and say, well, you know, what did it make any sense? Mm-hmm. Mostly it didn't. I think the first one I mentioned was some sort of like custom podcast app. So I thought that would be nice to have that in a smaller form factor. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, the fact that the watch needs to use the phone anyway mm-hmm. means that if, you know, since you already have to have your phone, you might as well just use your phone if you're really wanting to do that. Mm-hmm. But it turns out, no, you can't. You don't really have access to the hardware in your watch app. So you can't play music. You can't play anything. Mm-hmm. You can't play sound. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, that's a no-go. You can't play podcasting stuff. And I'm not sure if the watch actually has a headphone jack anyway. It might not.
I don't think it does.
And that's pretty much a no-go. I had talked about using like Siri to do commands on your watch. Mm-hmm. And I think that will be possible. It's not working right now in the beta that we got, but there's voice input functionality mm-hmm. that exists there. So, you know, if you want to, you know, Kit, I need you. That in theory would be possible, although you wouldn't be able to do much with that. Mostly you probably want to have that go talk to your phone and do something there, but that's possible. Since there's no speaker access, you know, like quizzes where they tell you the answer audibly, that's mm-hmm. not going to be possible. But you could, you know, if you talk into the watch by voice, and then it could show you something on the screen, so that would be possible. Mm-hmm. So what I would say in general is informational apps would be the best way to go here. If you want to show little bits of information, and then you go further than that and you say, getting that information, you probably want to have that information come from your iPhone app, mm-hmm. the app that's already there. So social apps that are already out there, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Reddit, whatever, when they say, well, now I want to be able to give you some information on your watch. That's going to be the most useful because it's very simple what you can do there, but it is information. So if the whole, you know, if the whole point of an Apple Watch is it's a device for people who don't like taking their phone out of their pocket, and you know, Apple, you can have that slogan for free. I'm not going to require anything for that. But then apps are going to be basically the same way. Little bits of information that, you know, if you really wanted to, you could take your phone out and do it. But since you don't, you could do it this way. Since things are so limited, I think stuff like games, I did mention games as well, are pretty much a no-go. It would be really difficult for you to make animation work well on your phone, excuse me, on your watch. And that's pretty much, they're very, very concerned about battery life, performance. And, you know, if you're really stressing the GPU on that, they're probably not going to like that either. So that's probably not a good idea, at least for now. Now, so that leads to, well, that's what we have now. It's really quite limited. It's interesting, but it's quite limited. And again, this hackathon, one of the things they talked about with the hackathon I talked about earlier was, hey, let's brainstorm. Let's think about what kind of apps we can make. And I really think the answer to that is not many. And so if you're thinking you're going to go in and you're going to find me, how, you know, you missed the first iPhone gold rush.
Right.
Now you want to get in on this gold rush. You're going to finally put something together really quick and get it out there and make money on it. I doubt it. I doubt it's going to work. But I already know people who work at these other companies who are saying, oh, you know, now I got to get something. We got to get something working, you know, in time for when the Apple Watch is actually going to come out. But I think the rest of us, it's, you know, we'll see how that goes. Now, as far as the future is concerned, Apple has said starting later next year, developers will be able to create fully native apps for Apple Watch. Now, it's interesting. I did do kind of a brief run through of some of the podcasts I listened to see what they had to say about Apple Watch. And in the Accidental Tech Podcast episode 92, they do talk about it. And I believe John Siracusa talked about how it's puzzling because what Apple did with the iPhone was it limited what you could do until the hardware could support more. At least that's the theory, right? You couldn't multitask until there was faster iPhones, for example. If what they're saying now is, well, we're giving you these very, very limited things that you can do for performance reasons, but next year we'll give you better native access. So you, instead of just being able to make things where the code runs on the phone, now you'll have code running on the watch. How can they do that if the watches are the same watches we're going to be buying in the beginning of next year? So that's interesting. And you know, I think one thing that I've seen, that we've seen from what we've talked about here, is that when Apple shows it, when Apple doesn't tell you something and you know, you speculate wildly about it, and the only answers you can think of are really, really unlikely answers, those are not the things Apple's going to do. Because they're not miracle workers, they're just good developers and you know, hardware makers. So if it seems unlikely, maybe it is unlikely. Maybe when they say fully, I don't know, it seems like fully native can't mean what they're saying it would mean, unless they're going to come out with version 2 of the watches really, really quickly, which they might, I guess. But again, that also has its problems. And suddenly all these people who have the first versions of the Apple Watch are working at outdated hardware. You don't want that either. So what's going to happen with that? I don't know. I think we would be right to be, you know, to pay pretty close attention to see what's going to happen there, because there's stuff that we're not quite getting yet about it. But, you know, given they have released a lot of information, it's all new stuff to look at, stuff to try out. And the, you know, simulator does work. I'm going to be looking into it more, and there's going to be a lot of information out there for people to read on it. So it's very interesting. It's interesting, you know, in part because of the limitations. We'll see how it goes. Thoughts?
Yeah. So when you mention about the native apps, I don't think they're going to give us like version 2 of the iWatch immediately. I do think it's more of a software holdup type thing, that, which is kind of weird, right? Why are they kind of going out of their way to do this kind of remote connection thing when they could just be kind of working on native apps first? But I think it's kind of just a resource allocation thing, and maybe they need to have their remote stuff in place anyway, so it's kind of just like how they're building out their timeline. I am excited about the Apple Watch, and I want one. But it's kind of weird because I want one for almost like I have you. I don't know if you've like I ever have held like the very first generation iPod. And these things are bricks.
I have, actually.
Yeah, those things are bricks, right? You know, they're huge.
Come on. They're not that bad. They're not
the mechanical scroll wheels and stuff like that. I mean, you look at it.
I liked it. I mean, it was good industrial design.
Oh, yeah. I'm of course, it was well designed, but it's still very bricky. And it's very obvious to me, like, if you look at the Apple Watch, and they do a pretty good job of kind of, like, hiding the fact of how fat it is.
They try to hide it, yeah.
It's kind of like
there's some pictures. There's some pictures of, like, the... Yeah.
There's like that weird MySpace angle, right? That they also do on the iMac.
Oh, yeah. Right. Right. We're talking about the same thing. Yep. Yeah, they're like, you know, beautiful models holding it at exactly the right angle so that it looks cool.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, this is a big square on your wrist. This is not going to look that cool. So.
But I think that I don't think it'll have to ship like new hardware. I think they will have a weird operating system. Yeah, I mean, it's weird that we can now update the operating systems on our watch. But I suspect they will have an OS release. But yeah, but I do want an Apple Watch, and almost because like the original iPod was a brick, but there was something very interesting about it, right? Because like it's like a first of its species, and you could like it was like a milestone in the evolution, you know, that you could then track into the down to the current iPods or whatever. I guess no one uses iPods anymore, but anyway. So I almost want that huge clunky wrist thing. That's because, you know, in 20 years that would be hipster cool. Of course, it probably won't even run 20 years from now, but but anyway, but just like everyone would be, you know, having their retina watches in their eye. I mean, literally retina watches in their eye. And you'll be like with this big piece of metal on your wrist.
You're not necessarily selling me on this one.
So I have a couple of notes here. I am surprised that storyboards factor into this in such a large degree. I don't know. It's just like storyboards. I think I even saw some tweets about how you can't do it in code at all. And from what you're describing to me, and that's correct, that it actually everything has to be done in storyboards.
Yep.
And I always think of storyboards like this kind of like heavyweight thing. And it's surprising to me that that they're basically pushing that over Bluetooth Low Energy.
Well, they are, but
I mean, the
watch. The watch app, the resources, the bundle of resources get installed on your watch and stay there.
Yeah, right. I mean, especially if they're doing things where it sounds like Interface Builder has been upgraded, where it's kind of specialized now for WatchKit. I think I saw a tweet from Jockenberry about how you couldn't actually even change a custom class name in Interface Builder. So I wouldn't be surprised if like they aren't using like the same like binary format they use for storyboards for iPhone apps. They might even have like a special custom output for WatchKit apps.
Although I think they're still using the same storyboard file format, because that is, as we've discussed, completely separate. It's not the runtime format. Right. It's just text and
that's what I'm talking about.
It would make sense that they're doing that. Yeah.
So I can see why they're doing it, but I don't know. I always viewed storyboards as kind of like this higher level thing than Zibs, and it's surprising that for this really resource constrained environment, the storyboards factor in so prominently.
Yeah. Well, they also the three different things that you can do. You can do the app itself, you can do the glance and the notification. All of those are bundled in the same single storyboard file. So I bet that's why they do that instead of an IB file. Because storyboards were specifically invented to have multiple view controllers in them at once. So it's the same sort of thing.
Yeah, good point. The other thing that I'm kind of surprised about is that, all the code is running on your phone. And yet they're saying, you know, don't do long running calculations or networking. Like, I understand that it's kind of weird because it's kind of this extension environment. But I mean, we have super, you know, our iPhones are supercomputers, and you can do all sorts of calculations on them as long as you want. I mean, it seems weird that they say don't do any math there.
Well, don't save a giant file or something. I don't know. No, extensions are their own thing, and it's very interesting seeing what they told us about extensions when iOS 8 came out versus how they're using them for the phone, for the watch. When it seems pretty clear to me that the reason they introduced extensions at all was for the watch, right? Like, they gave you a lot of other reasons to use them later, but some of those seem kind of half-baked. Like, there's that article that I'll dig up and I'll put in the show notes about, you know, the custom keyboards kind of being really janky and not, you know, not the kind of experience you would want to have if these were first-class capabilities of the iPhone. And they just feel kind of rushed. And I think we know now why they were rushed. They were rushed because, wow, we really need it for the watch, so we have to put it in the next major version of the OS. And you know, this is what we get. But no, there's definitely a tiered system, and they mean for you to use the phone for real supercomputer tasks. The phone app for supercomputer tasks. The extension is really just the reflection of the watch app running it at the same time it does, dying at the same time it does. Mm-hmm. It's not meant to be, again, to be anything more than that. Just the counterpart, which is weird, but that's the way we're doing it.
Yeah. And then I saw a tweet from Hockenberry about being resource constrained, and I think he must have been talking about maybe the future of the native apps, which I imagine will be amazingly resource constrained, because are extensions really that resource constrained? Do you know? I mean, you are running simultaneously with the other app and other apps, even under iOS multitasking. But are there actually guidelines from Apple about how much memory an extension can use?
There are some, and again, these guidelines were released in the context of extensions running at the same time as your apps and sort of foregrounded with your apps, you know, like today extensions, you don't want to be using a huge amount of time because you want to be showing them that way. I don't know. You're right that it won't necessarily always make sense that that's the case, but that's definitely the philosophy. The philosophy is don't use a lot of power because you're not the frontmost app. Mm-hmm. You're the thing helping a frontmost app. So yeah, don't do a lot. It's just how they want you to do it.
Yeah. Well, that does it for me.
All right. So we'll see you next time.